Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Roy Blunt writes lots of books and he eats lots of food. That kind of combination has resulted in a most pleasing 24th book, Save Room for Pie, Food Songs and Chewy Ruminations. This is a book of course after course of essays and poems and songs about all things edible. He's done other things in his career as well, including singing with Springsteen, catching catfish with his bare hands, and hanging with Wilt Chamberlain. Roy's a regular on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. He's also a member of the American Heritage Dictionary's Usage Panel and a member of the Fellowship of Southern Writers. And Roy, what a pleasure to have you here. Thanks for taking some time.
Thank you, Steve. Good to be here.
Well, it seems to me there's this collision of big ideas out in our culture right now. And by that, I mean this idea that most people love to eat on the one hand, and on the other, this notion that we should be engaged in healthy eating all the time. And I'm wondering how you're navigating that, Roy.
Well, in the first place, I think that eating primarily for health is like marrying for money. You know, it's an ulterior motive, which is to say it's not entirely crazy, but there's something to be said for it. But if you don't have an element of yum to start with, neither of those things is going to go very far.
Now, you addressed this concern early on, and I got the impression that this concern about health isn't exactly slowing you down a whole lot.
Well, I do try to be healthy, and but fortunately, my wife keeps up with things, and more and more we eat bacon and eggs, and we've found that if something sounds like a pool sharp, like natural fats, then it's good for you. Whereas
yes.
if it sounds like something sadomasochistic, like
whipped spread,
exactly, then stay away from it.
Well, early on in this book, there's a poem, and I guess that the title of this book begins to suggest a certain theme. And this is a poem about butter on page 5. Would you read that little ditty to us here, Roy?
I will indeed. Bananas are yellow in their season. Butter is always. And better on peas, on toast, on cornbread, on corn on the cob. A baked potato begins to throb with life, with juice, when butter melts down, down into each crevice, and, oh, nothing else melts the way butter melts. Truer words were never uttered. Anything good is better buttered.
There you go. Yeah. That says a whole lot, doesn't it?
Well, I like to think so. Thank you.
You know, people wonder, Roy, because you love all these different kinds of foods, and yet you're not fat, though you're often told that on the radio, you sound a little portly.
Yeah, I have the advantage of apparently sounding kind of fat on the radio. So when people meet me, they say, "You're not that fat." And that doesn't mean that I'm svelte, but it means that I'm more nearly svelte than I sound. So I got that going for me.
Author Roy Blunt is my guest. You offer some eating guidelines in your new book. Eat less gravy than you want is maybe the first one. What's that about?
Well, you know, everybody wants all the gravy they can possibly eat. So your capacity for gravy is something that is easy not to exceed. So that's a pretty easy one, you know. And save room for pie. You know, there are two ways you can go. If you know, eating, say, French fries, the first two or three French fries are good, and nobody would ever blame me for eating two or three French fries. But after that, if you keep on eating all the French fries, you're stuffing your face. So in order to avoid eating all the French fries, there are two ways you can go. You can either say, okay, go ahead, get fat. Go ahead. You're just disgusting. You're eating all those. Why are you eating all? And that just helps you to hate yourself even more. But if you say to yourself as you approach the fourth French fry, why don't we save room for pie? It's much nicer.
That's much better, because your addendum to that first guideline is, as you just sort of said in a different way, after five potato chips, you're just trying to reclaim the glory of the first two, and you know it.
You don't need those other French potato chips or French fries.
Guideline number two, never eat anything promoted as amazing, because
that's
it might actually be.
Yeah, I read some kind of horrible, there are all sorts of things where, for instance, I wrote a thing in this book about biscuits. There was a biscuit place in New York City where they were a biscuit place. I mean, it's all about biscuits. They have now closed. But while they were still open, I wrote about them and wrote about the fact that they served biscuits with banana pudding in them. which is just crazy. Huh. And so, yeah, you don't want to tart up something as basic as a biscuit.
Is it difficult for you as you grow, you know, older to be a little more adventurous and go out and try restaurants and new foods that you haven't tried before?
No, I will say this for me. I will,
not at all. Yeah.
I will try to eat anything that's, you know, I've always been prejudiced against kale. But last night in a family-style restaurant in Decatur, Georgia, my hometown, I had a kale salad that was actually quite good. It had the right dressing on it somehow. It was excellent, and it's also good for me. Also, I found out a little while ago that kale has this in common with octopus.
Mm-hmm.
If it's fried, it's not bad.
We do go through these different fads when it comes to food. You know, you mentioned kale being one. Are you a little suspicious of those things as they come down the pike at you?
Yeah, I mean, where were they all these years? You know, and all of a sudden they're the ideal food. But I don't want to just close my mind to, because I, you know, if I had not, people talk about acquired taste. You know, say, oh, that's just an acquired taste. People don't really like. My mother tried to tell me when I was a kid, people don't really enjoy the taste of whiskey. They just want to get tiddly. And I felt that was not true. And in fact, it isn't true. I enjoy the taste of whiskey. And also, so I'm open to enjoying the taste. If I had not acquired tastes, I would never have started eating pizza or anything with garlic in it or yogurt. The first tastes of those things I didn't like, or not to mention whiskey.
Roy Blunt's my guest. His new book, Save Room for Pie, Food Songs, and Chewy Ruminations. We were talking about these different guidelines that Roy lists early in the book. The fifth and final one is the source of your book's title, Save Room for Pie. You call pie the highest form of food, Roy. What did you mean by that?
Well, that's what I meant. You know, it's nothing tastes sweet, wet, salty, and dry all
at
once.
That's true.
So well is pie.
What kind of pie is up highest on your list?
Well, there's lots of them. It's like on Thanksgiving Day, I love a pumpkin pie or mincemeat pie. But then there's apple pie, and there's coconut custard pie, and there's blackberry cobbler. I consider cobbler a pie.
Oh, I do too.
Somebody told me the other day they're either cake people or pie people. It's not to say you don't like cake, but you just realize that pie is much messier, but also much more various and multi-layered and just more glorious than cake.
Huh. You were raised in the South, Decatur, Georgia, to be exact. The South has always had a special relationship with food. Tell us about that.
Well, in the South, for one thing, we like to talk while we're eating and talk about what we're eating while we're eating it. You want me to read this thing?
You know, yes, I do. And I got to tell you, I was reading that yesterday in my house, and my 17-year-old was still upstairs sleeping. I woke him up. I was laughing so hard. He was wondering what was going on. This passage just really got to me.
Well, I'm sorry you woke up your child.
Yes, I did. People talking while they eat. That's what this is all about here.
Yeah. Okay, when several sides and generations of a family of folks sat down together around a table with 10 or 12 generous platters in front of them, they sounded something like this. And us to thy service, amen. Pitch in. Oh, I don't know where to start first. Big Mama has outdone herself tonight. Well, I just hope y'all can enjoy it. I believe I could eat a horse. Would you look at them tomatoes? Ooh, don't they look good?
Yeah.
Now, Tatum, slow down. You let that child enjoy himself. Well, you would think we didn't feed him at home. He didn't get any snap beans. Lord, pass that child some snap beans. Lila, how about you over there? You need something more. Butter beans. Ooh, Len, no, I'm working on this corn. Come on, just a dab. Well, you talk me into it. It's awful early to be getting this good of corn. Eunice, would you send that okra back around? Look at me, just a-putting it away. I'm eating like a field hand. A little more tea to wash it down. These greens. Anybody want anything? Well, I will have one more helping of that squash, if nobody minds. It's so good. Little cornbread to sop that juice. One more mouthful of ham, then I do have to stop, sure enough. Look at all this chicken left. Have a little more there, Charles. Oh, where would he put it? Yes, I mean, just a spoonful of that gravy to put on my peas. Charles, we didn't raise you to mix your gravy with your peas. Celia, now you let that child eat the way he likes it. More rolls, anybody?
Oh, I think this is all I can hold.
You better eat some more of this good chicken. Nom, I got to save room for pie. Pie? There's pie? Oh, listen, pie? Now, Needy, you know good and well we wouldn't let you go home and tell people we didn't serve you any pie.
Look at that pie.
What is in this pie? This pie is so good. How do you get your crust to do like this, Big Mama? My crust won't do like this. Oh, your crust does fine. Well, I have eaten myself sick. Wasn't that good? I don't think I could touch another bite. I'm about to pop. Yes, Lord. Them tomatoes were especially good. Got plenty more now. I could slice right up. No, I'd die.
That's Roy Blunt reading from Save Room for Pie, Food Songs and Chewy Ruminations. In Georgia, you write, Roy, that you used to eat until you got tired. That's a long time.
Right. And then you go, whew, and wish you could really gather up your energy to eat some more.
You struggle with smell. You've been on again and off again when it comes to your own sense of smell for many years now. What's happened there, and how does it affect your ability to enjoy good food, Roy?
Well, it's called, I didn't know there was a name for it, but it's called anosmia. Anosmia means that your sense of smell is hampered by. And I've had sinus problems, which leads to that. And sometimes it clears up, and if I go down in the morning and I can smell the coffee, I know I'm going to have a better tasting day than if I can't smell it. So it's kind of a tragic. You can still get the basic flavors. I mean, the basic tastes, sugar, sweet, sour, bitter, what all, and salty and umami. But you don't get all the layers of flavor, and it affects lots of people, and nobody talks about it. But people are beginning to study it now. There's a whole center in Philadelphia that's studying it. So maybe we can figure out how to address this plight.
So no cure for it right now.
No. I've had operations on my sinuses and things, there's scar tissue up in there. I don't want to get too graphic about the inside of my nose, but
it is
reason people don't talk about it.
As a boy, what was your favorite dish?
Well, let's see. I would say barbecued chicken, maybe. But then the more I think about it, deviled eggs rated mighty high.
No, that's interesting.
All kinds of things. My mother made this wonderful corn casserole.
Yeah.
And her beef stew was awfully good that she made in the pressure cooker. She would put chunks of beef and onion and carrots and potatoes in there and put in that pressure cooker, which was liable to explode any minute. But it would produce the greatest gravy I've ever had.
Tell us about the possum cooking competition, which you take on in this book from the judge's point of view.
Well, it was not just possum cooking. It was down in Alabama. I don't know, years back when I wrote this story, you would often see bumper stickers saying, "Eat more possum." Those all sprang from the imagination of a man named man down in Clanton, Alabama, who had a big festival every year of possum, and there was a contest for the best-looking possum. And so people from some distance away would bring in their possums that they had shampooed and fixed up. And they made me one of the judges. And I said, I don't know how to judge a possum. And he said, you can just tell a good possum. And sure enough, all the judges tended to kind of agree on which you know, and the numbers you gave for not taste, but for appearance, and
they wouldn't give them shampoos, literally.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. It would shampoo them, and on the tail, you know, they have these kind of scaly tails, but one lady used Babo on the tail.
Man, that takes my breath away.
It was quite a sight to see, and the possums didn't necessarily like it, but there they were.
There they were anyway.
Hard to tell what a possum likes.
Why did it take you 24 books to finally get to food?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe I took my food writing for granted because it just came from, it's widely scattered stuff that I've written for. All and some things appearing for the first time in this book, but lots of things from my column in Garden and Gun. So lots of those columns were about food, about mm-hmm. things like okra and okra phobia. And so I realized I had a bunch of stuff that I could put together into a book.
I wanted to ask you, Roy, about some of the people you've written about over the years, because I had interview envy reading about some of these folks that you spent time with. Tell us about hanging with Wilt the Stilt Chamberlain, a KU student back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Yes, that's right. He did go to KU.
Yeah.
Probably the tallest KU student at that time. I think he was a high jumper, in fact.
Yes, he was, and a good one, too.
Yeah. He was a great athlete. I wrote a long story for Sports Illustrated by Wilt, as told to me, mm-hmm. about how he was retiring from playing basketball. And he and I hung out, and he was just so tall. And I turned to him in the elevator at one point, and my face was level with his elbow.
Wow.
And he lived in a house in Bel Air, California, that was the house was tall enough for his height. And I was writing this, and Wilt had to approve every word of the story, so in the headlines. And so I was sitting on this wolf muzzle sofa, and meanwhile his friends were walking around and saying, you know, just waiting for me to try to take advantage of Wolf, Wilt, which I was not about to do. And it goes on and on.
Did you enjoy him?
Yeah, I liked him. He was easy to work with in the sense that he was well-spoken, as they say.
Yes.
Lots of people who are well-spoken, when you write it down, it doesn't make that much sense. But he was he would speak in whole sentences, and you could write it down, and it pretty much worked as writing. And, you know, you fiddle with it a little bit, and I would show it to him. And so it was fine. But then there was this headline, which the headline they sent in said, Wilt Chamberlain, a dominant force in basketball, announces his retirement from the game. And he did not like a dominant.
He wanted it to be the dominant force.
Yeah, and his friends were milling around. He had these friends there, and they were saying things like, how do you go into a man's home and call him a dominant?
That's not enough, Roy. Come on.
Yeah. And the wolf muzzles were kind of whistling up under me.
You also once interviewed Joe DiMaggio. I mean, Richard Ben Kramer did that book a number of years ago that was so hard on Joe DiMaggio. How did you find him?
I found him not very willing to just sort of kick back and talk.
Yes, that's what
he
you
was
hear.
Sitting there. He was a coach for the Oakland A's at the time. That was the Oakland A's under Charlie Finley, when they had this absurd combination of white shoes and the awful looking uniform. And there was Joe DiMaggio, Mr. Elegant, sitting there wearing white shoes. Mm-hmm. And he didn't want to talk to me, and so he didn't say much. And apparently, I was working at Sports Illustrated at the time, and apparently something, they had run afoul. He'd run afoul of SI before, mm-hmm. and so he did not give me much attention, so
that's
I wrote
tough.
About him from a distance.
You also once talked to Martin Luther King Jr. What do you remember that?
I was working for the Atlanta Journal then, and I was sort of the third string stringer for the New York Times down here in Atlanta. And I went to, he's had the Poor People's Campaign going at that time. It was bringing a whole lot of people to Washington to complain about poverty, and he was just real easygoing and nice to talk to. Joe DiMaggio considered himself much more important than Martin Luther King did himself.
What's all this about you once catching catfish with your bare hands? Why would you do that?
Well, I didn't have a pole. No, I was going down the Mississippi River for a thing for PBS, a film that finally came out called The Main Stream. And one thing was that we got down in the water and, you know, grabbled. There are all kinds of terms for this, but the term I used was grabbling for catfish. So what you do is they get them up in a hole somewhere, and then you reach into the hole. You put on rubber gloves so they don't chew off your fingers, but reach it.
Right.
And grab this big catfish by the lip, you know, the lower mouth, and they bite down on your hand, and then you wrestle them out and hold them up, and there you've got yourself a catfish barehanded, and it tasted awful good, I tell you that.
Well, in these parts, they call that practice noodling. We've done shows on
noodling,
it before,
yeah.
And I'm not sure I'd have the guts to put my hand into a hole, go underwater, then submerge my hand into a hole and see what I pulled out. That just strikes me as beyond what I'm my own capabilities.
Well, if you were on film at the time, and you
that would change
you did not want to come off for all time as the biggest weenie in the world.
Yeah, then
you
do it
and reach in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Loretta Lynn has a new album out, and you've talked to her too, Roy.
Yeah, I was in at the Country Music Hall of Fame Motel with her, and she, trying to remember the sequence of this, but she reached into, she was going to show me this pistol she had or something in her, and she reached in and kept coming up with things like these pills. She said, here's my Darvon, and she never quite found the pistol, but I love Loretta Lynn, but I don't think she liked my story for some reason. And Mooney Lynn was in the next room snoring, and so we walked in there and poked him.
But you don't know what she didn't like about your story?
Well, I think I said something about how she, about her looks, which was not, well, for one thing, she was, I think she had curlers in her hair when I was interviewing her, and I said sort of complimentarily that I thought that she hadn't gone out of the way to priss herself up for me, and I think she took that I meant it as a compliment, but she took it as a slight.
You've also stood on stage and performed with Bruce Springsteen. What brought you on stage with Bruce Springsteen?
Well, I'm just cautioning you right now not to ask Bruce about this. I remember it probably a lot more than he does.
He does.
I'm in kind of tangentially an author's rock and roll band, and we have appeared.
Stephen King and others are in that, right?
Dave Barry, Stephen King, Amy Tan, and we appeared in L.A. and he was there, and Dave Marsh was his was a good friend of his. Dave at that time was in
the
band.
He's been here, yeah.
Yeah, Dave and a couple of other people and I were in the Critics Chorus, which we did things like we wear short shorts and then dropped our pants. That was the level of the Critics Chorus musicality. But so Bruce showed up while we were singing Gloria, and just it was quite a thrill. GLOR, that's one of the songs they let me sing on. You know, I tended to sing titles of songs.
Did he just hop up on stage and want to
Gloria? Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, sure. Did he just hop up on stage and want to take part with you guys?
He came in from offstage. I mean, he didn't hop up. I wouldn't say that. But yeah, he was in town and he knew Dave, and so he joined us, and it was quite a thrill, and he pretty well stayed in tune.
there wasn't a problem with him on that one, eh?
No, he was fine. He was probably among the best of us there.
One of the top two or three, yeah.
Yeah, clearly, yeah.
You've also rafted the Amazon and been attacked by piranha. Do tell.
I wrote a story for Sports Illustrated about going down the headwaters of the Amazon, the Huallaga River, on a raft. And it was a very highly developed raft with hammocks in it and things. But at one point we were out in the water in the Amazon swimming, and I felt a little nibbling on my leg. And I thought, well, I'm just having an and hysterical piranha attack. I'm just going to ignore that. But then I felt a sharper bite.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Even a sharper bite, and I sprang up out of the water and back up onto the raft, and everybody was laughing at me. And
oh, my gosh.
So I said, well, okay, I'll get back on the horse here. But just as I was about to get back in the water, I felt a flippity-flippity sensation on my thigh, and I looked at my bathing suit pocket, and it was going flippity-flippity.
Oh, no.
And I sort of reached down, and in front of witnesses, I flipped out this piranha, and it, and then you could see the bites on my leg, this little pattern. The photograph of the bites actually appeared in Sports Illustrated, but the piranha jumped off into the water and did not really eat much of me. It just broke my skin. So
yeah.
Thankful for that.
Hey, one more on this little trip down memory lane here. You had a chance to interview and meet Satchel Paige. We've done shows on books written about Satchel, but you met the actual guy.
Yeah, a couple of times. I met him in Atlanta when he was attached to the Atlanta Braves for a while, and he pitched an exhibition couple of innings against the Richmond farm team, throwing his hesitation pitch.
And
God knows how old he was then, but I saw him suit up, and he had spike wounds all over his legs, and his lower legs, just his calves, just looked like iron pipes. It didn't seem to have any calf muscle on them. He was, he said, everybody says to me, you may be 60-something years old, but you look like a young doctor. I don't know where that came from. But also, he said, I saw him again at a bowling tournament in Pittsburgh for sickle cell anemia. And he was eating fried chicken. And I said, Satchel, I thought you said, and this was a quote that had been attributed to him, I thought you said avoid fried foods because they angry up the blood. And he said, I said avoid them. I didn't say I avoided them.
I read that somewhere in your book or somewhere. That's just great.
It's in this book, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Roy Blunt's new book, Save Room for Pie, Food Songs, and Chewy Ruminations. Roy, what a pleasure to have you here. Good luck with the book.
Thank you, Steve.
Just been great. Thanks very much.
Oh, thank you.